Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Monday, December 2nd, 2013.
It's kind of sci-fi what's happening today. Zombie epidemic has hit the USA. Get it through your TV, listen. Well, I'll tell you how. It's taxing the brain like contaminated cows. Just like in the movie, Night of the Living Dead. One day when you wake up, you're cracked up in the head. Happens when you fall asleep in front of your TVs. When you start believing, boy, you got cowboy disease. Cowboy disease. Cowboy disease.
The song is called Mad Cowboy Disease by a minstrel from Berkeley, California, Vic Sadat. He Facebooked me the other day and reminded me of this song. There's an updated 2013 edition of Mad Cowboy Disease.
Mad cowboy can be fatal. Make you paranoid, make you maladjusted, a person to avoid.
I'll put up a link in the show file with this podcast, or you can go to YouTube and do a search under Vic Sadot, S-A-D-O-T, and Mad Cowboy Disease 2013. Well, the Mad Cowboys and Cowgirls in Washington, D.C. were on the Sunday political chat shows. And by the way, your humble host does not waste time on Sundays watching the gas bags. I find these shows a total waste of time. And you can always get the highlights of what they're pumping out in terms of talking points by the follow-up coverage on Mondays, and that's what we have here. Yesterday, Senator Feinstein of California, chair of the Intelligence Committee on the Senate side, and her compatriot Mike Rogers, a former FBI agent who chairs the House Intelligence Committee, both took to the airwaves to promote fear. And without offering a shred of evidence or any supporting information whatsoever, they simply told us that the terrorism threat against the United States is increasing and Americans are not as safe as they were a year or two ago. Now, I have to tell you that I think this is a load of crap. And the credibility of Mike Rogers and Dianne Feinstein is at nearly zero. And I don't know how many times they think they can say the sky is falling and please let us tap your phone, read your email, and conduct police state level surveillance. Or bad guys from Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab and other Al's are going to ruin your holiday plans. And for a moment, let's just consider that maybe Mike Rogers and Dianne Feinstein, who have access to all the secret intelligence, know something that we don't know. And they're constrained. They're not allowed to spill that intelligence. And so they go into these kind of nebulous, inferential statements. And they're trying to persuade Americans who spent the weekend watching the new Hunger Games movie or other violent fare that they got to give it up. The Fourth Amendment is just a little piece of history that has no place in the ugly, terrorist-filled world of today. And not for a moment does Dianne Feinstein think that her actions, the military actions that she has routinely voted for by this country, create the cause that leads people to jihad. It leads people to a path of terrorism against the United States. Feinstein spoke generally of a real displaced aggression in this very fundamentalist jihadist Islamic community. And that is that the West is responsible for everything that happens. And that the solution is Sharia law. Now, that misstates so many things. And it, once again, obscures any kind of blowback that hits the United States for our decades of covert operations in other parts of the world. Up to and including today's drone strikes and the surveillance of hundreds of millions of people who don't have any connection to terrorism whatsoever. It has run amok. And Feinstein and Rogers are desperately trying to hold on to these ill-conceived, unconstitutional surveillance programs, and their desperation is showing. New York Times on Sunday, in its Week in Review section, ran an interesting op-ed by Susan Stellan, who cites a report from the State University of New York Buffalo Law School called The Hidden Costs of Terrorist Watch Lists. And this is framed around a case that is going to trial here in San Francisco this week. And it was brought by a Stanford University PhD student, a woman named Rahina Ibrahim. She was prevented from boarding a flight at San Francisco International back in 2005, handcuffed and detained by the police, and she was ultimately allowed to fly home to Malaysia. But she's been unable to return to the United States because the State Department revoked her visa. And just before she went to the airport to fly home to Malaysia, FBI agents had been to visit her. They asked her about the upcoming trip. Not sure how they knew about it. About her religious activities as a Muslim, what her husband does, and what she might know about a Southeast Asian terrorist organization. And then she got tagged with some secret code that her lawyers still cannot decipher. But they believe that it put her on the no-fly list or one of its companion lists. There are now 700,000 people on the federal government's main terrorist watch list. Nobody will tell us how you get on the list, and there is no way to get off the list. You can't go to them and say, hey, wait a minute, you got the wrong person, you got the wrong information. And Hina Shamsi, a lawyer for the ACLU, says it makes no sense that people who've not actually been accused of any wrongdoing can't challenge their inclusion on a watch list. Now, over at the Terrorist Screening Center, they assure us that only about 1% of the people on there are American citizens, so, you know, these are disposable humans from other countries. Who cares? But there's no way to affirm that 1% assertion. It is just that, an assertion. Police state activities ramped up in Fort Worth last week as drivers along a busy street Friday afternoon, this is after Thanksgiving, were stopped at a police roadblock and directed into a parking lot, where they were asked by federal contractors to cough up samples of breath, saliva, or blood. And it's a pay-for-play game. One of the people who was forced into this voluntary road stop, they said it's voluntary, but a woman who's interviewed by NBC News out of Dallas says, well, it didn't seem very voluntary to me. She said she was on her lunch break when she was forced to pull over at the roadblock on Beach Street in North Fort Worth. She said, I gestured to the guy in front that I just wanted to go straight, but he wouldn't let me. He forced me into a parking spot. They were asking for cheek swabs, she said. They would give $10 for that. And if you let them take your blood, they'd pay you $50. And at the very least, she said, they wanted to test her breath for alcohol. She said, I finally did a breathalyzer just because I thought that would be the easiest way to leave. Fort Worth police say that off-duty cops are working for the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. And they're conducting these tests under a $7.9 million program. And it's supposed to be 100% voluntary and 100% anonymous. Doesn't that make you feel good about your government in action? I'm grateful to the people who subscribe and support my podcast here at peterbcollins.com. Over the long holiday weekend, we welcome Susan Vian, who signed up for an annual subscription. Thank you, Susan. Wesley Colangelo stopped by on a 24-hour pass. Hope you got what you're looking for, Wesley, and come on back anytime. And Kaylee Pickenpaw in Richmond, Virginia, who had emailed me last week, who was not successful the first time she attempted to subscribe. We're not sure exactly what glitch occurred. She successfully penetrated the system on November 27th and signed up for a new annual subscription. And Kaylee and Susan, you'll be receiving A bag of Kick-Ass Kona coffee, a gift of Russ Archibald, one of our listeners on the Big Island of Hawaii, and a bonus book. I'll have to see what's left. I've got Bill Ayers, and I also have a Heidi Boghossian's book. So one of those will be in the mail to you shortly. And I want to encourage new people to subscribe, sign up. $5 a month, $50 a year is the best deal. And I really need your support to keep this podcast going, and it's important validation of the work we do here. So this is the season. Go ahead, click on over to peterbcollins.com and follow the links under my picture on the homepage that say sign up. The other way you can help us, there's also a new banner ad up on the homepage on the left margin column, and it's from audible.com. They feature over 100,000 audiobooks for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, we've got this sweet arrangement where you can help my podcast without actually committing any money of your own. Audible will pay me $15 if you sign up for a new trial subscription, a trial membership at audible.com. You can cancel anytime during the first 30 days with no obligation and no cost to you. And Audible will give you your first audiobook download for free. So this is no risk, no cost. You end up kicking in $15 of somebody else's money to support this podcast, and you get a free audiobook. I think that's a win-win. And I hope you will follow the link on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. I'd like to see 500 people give us a big boost here in the month of December. So you can share that with friends and family. You can give it as a gift. And each time someone signs up using the link at peterbcollins.com, we get a nice little payment from audible.com. Well, speaking of websites and things like that, the healthcare.gov site is doing better. I think it's out of intensive care. It's off life support, but it's not ready to amble out of the hospital. And the insurance industry is saying that, oh, there's still glitches there, and it's very hard for people to access. I heard a news report this morning of a reporter who tried to log on and said that she had to go into a waiting room on the healthcare.gov website. They claim it can now handle 50,000 simultaneous users. As deadlines approach and people want the information about whether these new policies will work for them, hopefully the website will be more stable. But there still is sticker shock awaiting people who go to the exchanges looking for affordable health care insurance. The costs go up, and it's not a pretty picture, not at all. I take issue with Sunday's lead editorial in the New York Times. It reads, putting military pay on the table, the Pentagon must make painful but necessary cuts in compensation. And they're saying that based on the 10% sequester cut and other defense cuts that I certainly support, that we need to cut the pay for the uniformed service members. And I reject this out of hand. We need to cut the Pentagon budget substantially. But the personnel costs are not the big source of what the $600 or $700 billion that's public that the Pentagon is spending each year. And I think that asking the people who have served our military, in many cases gone into combat zones on repeated tours, who have had to put up with sexual harassment and possibly rape, 53% of the sexual assault is male on male in the military. And it's not gay. It's dominance. And so under these conditions, I cannot support any call to cut the pay of the... They don't make that much to begin with. It's a sacrifice to work in the military in this country. And I want to alert you to a great new feature that I see every month at BoilingFrogsPost.com. A guy named Christian Sorensen, I haven't talked with him yet, but he goes through the Pentagon list of contracts and compiles it for BoilingFrogsPost.com. In the month of November, the Pentagon spent $28 billion on 197 contracts. And let me just read a couple of samples for you here, okay? AAR Airlift Group got an unspecified amount for providing the Pentagon with aircraft services in Uganda, the Central African Republic, Congo, and South Sudan. And AAR Airlift Group received for this $151 million. Columbia Helicopters got $87 million. Construction Helicopters got $33 million. Now, we don't know the time period that these payments cover. But that's a huge investment in Africa that most Americans don't have a clue about. Here's G4S. They got $11.5 million for base operating services in Bahrain. The Institute for Defense Analysis got $888 frickin' million dollars for providing research and analysis to the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Lockheed Martin got $9 million for leasing a commercially classed dry submersible vessel. L3 Communications got $22 million for C-12 contractor logistics support. This is where we should be cutting. Not the pay for rank-and-file service members in our military. Also, over at BoilingFrogsPost.com, there is a new free video feature, and it is the BFP Roundtable, which features your humble host, Sibel Edmonds, the publisher of Boiling Frogs Post, and our video correspondent, James Corbett, of the Eye Opener video series and the Corbett Report. And we shot the pilot via Skype on the day after Thanksgiving, posted it over the weekend, and I welcome your comments. I won't poison your mind with my own critiques of our first pilot episode, but I welcome your comments. So trundle on over to BoilingFrogsPost.com, or you can go to YouTube and just look for BFP Roundtable. It is, as you'll hear in the video podcast at the behest of James Corbett, it is free. It is open source. And along with Sibel's breakdown on Iran and my discussion of recent developments at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, I think it's a very interesting package, and I hope you'll check it out and let us know your comments, pro and con. We'll be producing another episode in the near future, and I'll alert you to that as well. I also was quoted along with many others in an article that Politico published on Thanksgiving Day or the day after, I don't actually remember, and it's called Five Ways to Rescue Liberal Talk Radio, But It Won't Be Easy. And I was interviewed by reporter Mackenzie Wenger a few weeks back, and I think she did a pretty good job of talking to a lot of us who've been involved with progressive talk radio, both before and after the Air America blow-up. And I think it gives you an honest look at some of the reasons why liberal talk has not broken through on a level that is competitive with conservative talk in this country. I'll put a link to the Politico article in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. Protests around the world in Ukraine. The streets of Kiev are still filled with some protesters. There were hundreds of thousands on Sunday, and Monday morning many people remained, and the government seems to be trying to figure out exactly what to do. Windows have been smashed. Revolution HQ has been painted on the City Hall building in downtown Kiev. And this is a very interesting development because the Yanukovych government has walked away from an integration pact with the European Union in favor of closer relations with Russia. So they're looking east again instead of west. And in many of the cities in Ukraine, people identify much more with Europe than they do with Russia or the former Soviet Union. And so this is a very serious kind of protest that has been running now for almost a week. And the Yanukovych government, I think, is struggling to figure out exactly how to defuse it without undermining the deal that it's cut. And a lot of this has to do with the export of gas from Russia that runs on through pipelines through Ukraine into Europe. And there have been struggles in the past few years because Ukrainians were stealing gas from the Russian pipeline. There were many diversions, and the Russians have cracked down. They cut off supplies to Ukraine for a while last winter or the year before. And so this will be very interesting. And I want to note that I got a nice email from our longtime listener Andy Drawl over the long holiday break. He was responding to comments that I had made about Yulia Tymoshenko. She is a former prime minister of Ukraine, and she is now in prison. And he felt that I wasn't sympathetic enough to her. And my take on Ukraine is that this is an ongoing film noir. There are no good guys running for office or serving in high office in Ukraine. And while I do believe that at the moment Yulia Tymoshenko is a political prisoner, her own history of corruption before she entered office, she was heavily involved in the exploitation of the natural gas issues I referred to a moment ago, and then while she was in office. So I again, don't know what the right outcome here is. I don't presume to know what is best for the people of the Ukraine. But I don't have any special sympathies for Yulia Tymoshenko, other than it does appear that she is improperly jailed at the present time. In Thailand, the protests have continued, and the leader of Thailand's anti-government protests says he had met with the prime minister on Sunday after day-long clashes between his supporters and police, and he defiantly told her he would accept nothing less than her elected government stepping down to be replaced by an appointed council. The current Prime Minister, Yingluck Shinawatra, is the sister of the previous corrupt Prime Minister, and so there are very serious issues roiling Thailand these days, and it looks like that one's going to go on for some time. And when I see people going to the streets and fighting corrupt governments, it always makes me scratch my bald head here and say, what is it about Americans? What does it take to get Americans to protest the bad deals that they're getting from their government on so many fronts? And I don't have an easy answer for you. I got two important reports from our favorite investigative reporters today. And tomorrow, time permitting, I will share with you Steve Horn's in-depth report on the Strat4 leaks. And as you may recall, we recently read you parts of the sentencing statement read by Jeremy Hammond as he was sent away to jail. And Hammond, under the watchful eye of an FBI minder, hacked into Strat4. And Steve Horn has been reading through the emails that were purloined from Strat4. And we'll update you on that report tomorrow in our news and comment podcast. But Bo Hodai, who has been on our program many times over the last few months, talking about Homeland Security, the expansion of the Joint Terrorism Task Forces and their fusion centers, the use of government monitoring of social media to inhibit the activities of First Amendment activists, and the sharing of that information with corporate security units, I think has all been very important. Well, Bo Hodai today published an archive of documents that he got under a public records request from the state of Arizona. And it has to do with the plans to shift the prison population into private prisons and the outsized role of lobbyists for the Corrections Corporation of America, including their chief lobbyist named Jaime Molera. And I want you to I'll put up a link to dbapress.com, which is Bo Hodai's website, and you can absorb this information for yourself. But what we're seeing here is that Jan Brewer, who is not the sharpest knife in the drawer, she's been governor of Arizona since Janet Napolitano resigned to become Homeland Security Director under Obama, and she's now the Chancellor of the University of California. And so Jan Brewer has been, in many ways, I would say she's not a very bright woman, and the smart people around her are enriching themselves by shifting state business to private corporations. And so, for example, the records obtained by Boho Dye show that both Corrections Corporation of America lobbyists Jaime Molera and Catherine Sensiman, who's the wife of a former Brewer Communications Director and lobbyist Paul Sensiman, were engaged with the governor's office and the Arizona legislature in drafting budgetary language that resulted in the contract award to the private prisons company in 2012. Records show that the same lobbyist for the CCA company, Jaime Molera, essentially nominated a Pima County Superior Court judge named Catherine Woods for appointment to the bench by the governor, and she was subsequently appointed in 2011, and her law firm had worked closely with Molera and his lobby firm in another of business ventures. But one of the most interesting aspects is that Hodai has learned that the governor of Arizona doesn't use her official email account. She communicates perhaps with a Gmail account or a Yahoo account or some other outside server, probably to prevent probing reporters like Bo Hodai from accessing her, you know, public, her government email communications. And so Hodai had this conversation with Matt Benson, who is the communications director for Governor Brewer in Arizona, about where are her official emails?
In possession of the governor's office because she doesn't use a state email account.
Oh, yeah, what I'm telling you is that we did a review of the governor's email and didn't find anything responding to what you asked for on the governor's email account.
Okay, but you're also saying she generally doesn't use the state email account.
She generally does not use a state email account, as did the last governor. Generally, Governor Boltano did not use a state email account.
Okay. Let me ask you this. In my public records request, I specifically stated that I wanted all records or all emails, including emails and personal accounts that pertain to her performing state business.
Well, the only email I have access to is the governor's state email account.
Well, did you give this public records request to the governor?
The only email I have access to is the governor's state email account. I don't have any idea whether there's any other account. What I'm telling you is the governor's state email account is the account that we've checked and reviewed and not found records.
My public records request specifically stated that I wanted materials in other email accounts, such as governorbrewer@gmail.com, that the governor uses to perform.
I don't know what governorbrewer@gmail account is.
Okay, look, the thing is, just because you don't have access to it doesn't mean the governor doesn't. You know, did you give the public records request to the governor?
Yes, of course.
And did she review her other email accounts?
I don't know the answer. Look, Bo, we have reviewed all the state accounts for the email.
And so now Matt reverts to his prepared talking point and repeats them over and over again because the questioning has become a little too uncomfortable. Kudos to Bo Hodai for staying on the story there and following up on what appears to be a corrupt process of switching the prison population into for-profit prisons operated by Corrections Corporation of America in the state of Arizona. Hey, thanks for joining me today for news and comment. I'll be much obliged if you click on that Audible link at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.